Let's start this off by understanding that you get invited to do something like this because they think you're successful. We have three children that are adults that give us nine grandchildren, and three of them have been on and off and mostly on in ministry, and they make us look really good. So if you want to have the secret to successful parenting, get them to choose Jesus and you look like you are a really good parent. That's really the goal. And so our life goal was that they would choose Jesus, love Jesus, and still like us. And people think, oh, you're so funny. No, I'm serious. That was one of our goals. And so it's really, really important in this that we begin with removing guilt and shame. People feel a lot of guilt and shame in parenting. How do I know this? Because they don't ask us about our kids. You know why they don't ask us about our kids? They don't want to talk about theirs. 4 out of 5 of us don't finish well. The problem is 4 of those are now my friends. And they had kids, and it's painful. Kids are painful. They'll push every button that you have, and they know how to do it out of the womb. God has good kids and bad kids. We're all His children, right? Some of them are in prison for good reason. Great parents have bad kids, and bad parents have great kids. So the title of this class might not be that accurate, because I don't know that we're supposed to raise ministry kids. I think we're supposed to make disciples. And I think our home is our first ministry position that is the most important of all. And I think that when we shoot the arrow, we're not shooting them to a vocation. We're shooting them to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And we can get in the way of that by the way we raise them. Deuteronomy 6 says, "These words which I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them," and go on and on and on. So look, what's the point here? The point is, how do you teach them is by the way you live, not by your family devotional material. It's by how you do your life. Ministry is what? It's caught. It's not. Kids know what you do way more than what you say. So your life has to be your teaching. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for these people that are here interested in parenting, because it is our number one ministry. Thank you that they have children with needs and lives and callings and giftings. And Lord, as we stood in front of our congregations usually and kunte kinte'd them up to you and said, Lord, we give this back to you as stewards. Help us to steward these children that you've given us temporarily to the best of our ability. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm about to introduce to you the most talented and most beautiful person on earth who has given her life to this. I am simply eye candy. Comedic relief every now and then. Usually I describe us as a mullet. I'm the business and she's the party. And on this subject, it's the exact opposite. She's the business, I'm the party. So would you welcome my life coach in parenting, Stella Windy Beach.
Thank you. People are always wondering, why do you have two names? In the Latino world, you have two names. You have your Spanish name, Estela Ana is my name. But Americans can't say that, or English speakers can't say that. So I had to choose an English name, which is Windy, which my mother said, Windy, W-I-N-D-Y. Later on, if you're wanting to contact me for any reason about parenting, which is definitely a passion I have, it's windyveach@gmail.com. So real easy, and I'd be happy to correspond with you. Welcome. Thank you. We serve a wonderful God who cares deeply, not just for us, but for our children. He's given us many blessings, some of us more than others. And I think it's wonderful that you're here and that you're willing to learn and grow and be challenged in your parenting walk. Some of you are here because you're grandparents. Some of you are here because you didn't have anywhere to go. Maybe you're desperate. Maybe you just wanted to be with your friends. For whatever brought you, we're just really thankful that you're here. I was looking at my life journals. It's so interesting. Pastor Joe spoke last night, talked about his life journals. I have 53 years of life journals. And I was looking at my parenting journey, and my topic is always parenting well, because I think we can parent well. And I turned to a page where we first began our journey, and it was 1980. Our oldest son was barely one when we started this and started taking psychology classes and just on a trajectory of really doing a good job. That was my goal. And when was the last time as a parent we really were able to be somewhere where we said, I want to do a better job, but I don't have those tools? So I hope today you have a takeaway, you have encouragement, because that's my two objectives today. Spoken like a true teacher, right? I have an objective that you will be encouraged and that you'll have at least one takeaway. I'd like to start off by quoting one of my most favorite scriptures about children. It's Proverbs 7. Teach my commandments and live. Keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your finger, write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my friend, and called insight your intimate friend. So as parents, I think we need wisdom and we need insight. We need the commandments to help guide us. We need his word to be written on the tablet of our hearts. But not just for us, because what we're trying to do is get our kids to be in that same situation. Like Dave just said, we're hoping that they will choose the God that we've chosen. And not all of them do, but I certainly hope and pray they will. And I know that's your number one thing. I don't think it's good enough that we just have on our wall, choose this day who you will serve. My family chooses God. It's not good enough. We've got to have strategies. We have to have ideas. We have to have absolutes. We have to have a vision. We have to have, if I dare say, a mission statement. So we live in the Northwest, and in order for any of our businesses up there, which would be Nordstrom, my favorite, and Starbucks, my second favorite, and Boeing, and Nintendo, and Amazon, do you see where I'm going with this? And Alaska Air, all those, if you go to those companies, you know what they have? Each one has a mission statement. Say mission statement.
Mission statement.
And what it does is, has anyone ever worked at Starbucks? Yeah, so you know the mission statement. Every cup of coffee. Nordstrom, anybody worked in Nordstrom? But come on, we know the mission statement. Yeah, Dan. Dan, I'm glad you're here, because I'm going to use you as my example. And then we have Boeing, and we have all these. When was the last time your family got together and put together a mission statement? Have you ever been challenged to do that? Now, if you were in the course that I like to give in parenting classes, your homework would be come up with a mission statement by tomorrow. I'm going to read to you part of the Veach Kid mission statement. It's not complete, but it's just part of it. I actually lost the original one a long time ago. I gave it to someone to copy, and they lost it in the copy machine. How that happened, I don't know. But that's okay, they're grown. So here we go. A mission statement is necessary because what we want is roots and wings. We want the foundation of the hearts to exist. And you can't have that unless you have a vision. And as a pastor, you probably have a mission statement for your church. But have you ever written one for your family? That's what I would like to encourage. So the mission statement for the Veach Kids goes partially as this. All Veach Kids will participate in family chores. They will speak their minds with clarity. They will participate in Sunday church and youth group. They will play a musical instrument. And it's his fault that that didn't happen well. They will speak Spanish. They will be part of a missions trip and go to summer camps. It was not an option. We need to teach our children to serve, right? And no better time than going to camp and being on a mission field. Serve our community. Be on sports teams. To be able to listen to a coach. To be able to do the right thing as a team. To show up and not give up. And we taught making good decisions. Our kids would make good decisions. And Dave's going to talk a little bit about that. We did this because here is an ultimate goal. This is taken from the book Gist by two doctors that I highly respect in how they parent, teach parenting. Any person without a significant understanding of authority, discipline, disappointments, relationships, and achievement has not developed and is not ready for adulthood. I want to read it again because I think it's very powerful, and you may have missed it. This is from the book Gist, G-I-S-T. Any person without a significant understanding of authority, discipline, disappointments, relationships, and achievement has not developed and is not ready for adulthood. So when we started our journey in parenting, we knew that we wanted our child to obey. We had a very strong, our first child, we said, was very strong-willed. Don't be fooled. Everybody's strong-willed. Don't think it's just you. I meet these parents, I go, this one is really strong-willed. We're all strong-willed. Look what it says in Galatians. Look at what it says about, and in Ephesians. And it's talking about our character. If you want really good scriptures that talk about developing character. And I always listen to parents that say, oh, we just love and joy and peace and patience. And they kind of stop there. But if you read the rest of the scripture, the second to the last, do you know what it is? Self-control. And it's with self-control and acknowledging, embracing, living, loving, with self-control that's going to help us get to where we want to be for our children. I'm getting ahead of myself, so I'm going to stop. But while I stop and make this transition with Dave, if you're taking notes, would you please write down what's one thing you would put on your mission statement? And then will you turn to a neighbor and tell that person what you would put as a mission statement today? Oh, it is. Okay. Got it.
Finish this scripture for me. But as for me and my house, how many of you have seen it hanging on someone's wall? Maybe your own. How many have ever seen this part of the scripture? And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. Choose. Who chooses? Youth camps, we'd always say, ain't no grandchildren in heaven, right? Because there's only children. So who gets to choose? The people that are saying, as for my and my house, we will serve the Lord, or everyone? I think everyone has to choose. Everyone has to decide whether or not they're going to follow Jesus. And if they follow Jesus, you will look like a rock star parent because they will do 90% of what you want them to do except for leave your community and go plant a church across the country or become a missionary. Choose this day. If it's true that we're supposed to teach them to choose to serve the Lord, why are we not teaching them to choose at two what they want to wear? Why are we not helping them make decisions all along life that have to do with choices. I think parenting has to do about making really good decision makers, not really obedient people. We are always concerned about obedience as opposed to choices. And it's their life choices. Aren't we made up of our choices? Our whole world's made up of our choices. Why aren't we training our kids to make good choices? I think that's what we need to focus on. Now, you got to understand that we grew up in the Dobson world of, you know, really difficult parenting with rough kids and how to keep them all in order. But to understand that we didn't subscribe to this. I have an elementary ed degree, special ed minor. I use that mostly in pastoral ministry. She has an early childhood ed degree, Spanish degree, master's degree in teaching. So a lot of our lives have been around childhood behavior. But what we chose was not to homeschool. I ran a Christian school. I put my kids in public school. Why? Because my Christian school wasn't making disciples. I want disciples. I don't want obedience. We didn't ban rock music. We were asking them to make choices of what was helpful and what was not. Just was listening to something on like a retro thing that Kyle said. And Kyle said to me, he goes like, yeah, I had that disc. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you did. I don't remember it. He goes, yeah, because you threw it out the car window on Highway 20. And I'm like, he said, you came back and you go, did you like that disc? I'm like, it was terrible lyrics. So I chucked it out your window. So we're trying to help them make good decisions. We were terrible. We never had great family devotion times. We're supposed to have really great family altar. We didn't do that. We let our kids go to dances. Okay, you can judge us all you want. Our kids are in ministry. Yeah. I don't know what the right thing to do is. I just know you want to get them in places where they have to learn to make good choices.
That's good. That's good. I'm so overwhelmed with the questions that we had afterwards from the first one. I'm kind of having a hard time finding my footing here. I'm going to start with technology. I can't believe how everyone came alive. I'm going to bypass some of my notes, and my daughter gave me great advice last night. She said, Mom, you're so overprepared. You just need to go read the room.
Read the room.
Read the room. Read the room. I'm going to start with technology, and here's why. It's keeping parents disengaged. Mm-hmm. It's keeping children disengaged. Dopamine is dropping all over. If you don't know what dopamine is, it's a hormone that's in our bodies. It's not meant to drop. It's a number one cause of addiction. So if you take heroin, for example, the level of dopamine is ginormous. And equal is a television, a device, and a telephone. I think just about everyone could raise their hand and confess, I'm a little addicted to the reels. I'm a little addicted to my Facebook. I'm a little addicted to just checking out. And instead of reading a book, I'm just going to watch reels or see who's commented on my Instagram and all those. So I'd like to read from the book Gist. Gist is a book that is not a Christian book. It's written by two doctors, and here's what they had to say, Dr. Zanderson and Dr. Johansson. Our caution, these two doctors, they're psychology doctors, psychiatrists and psychologists. Our caution about technology and media falls into four main areas of concern. The first one, the sheer volume of time spent on media. Two, the content of media. Three, the interruptions to focus and living life that causes, and the stressfulness and unnatural situation it can so easily put in our children. Never before has humanity been so sexualized as now. 2 years ago, we would have never guessed coming out of COVID that we would be facing the type of sexual, not just addictions, but changes that have happened in our world. Whether you are Christian or not, whether you are homeschooled, private schooled, public schooled, any schooled, no matter if you live rural or in the city, we are being infiltrated by changes that have actually been going on for many, many years. It just was more underground. Sodom and Gomorrah. The word says there's nothing new under the sun. So it's not like it's all of a sudden brand new. They go, oh my gosh. It's there, and it's at the hands of your children. It's in your hands. And if you are on any kind of feed or reel, guess what? It's right there. Our stores are making changes to accommodate these social changes. The uproar about Target and Kohl's and other stores that, well, we're all going to run to Walmart because they're not going to have that stuff. Your children are being pounced with this. And what are we going to do? Because if you take away their phones, the dopamine that's already dropped, you might have an addict and they're going to have a fit. You take away the iPad, you take away the TV, you take away all this stuff. Can I just caution you how much they are on their devices? So we have three kids, and I'm going to talk about the grandkids and what they're allowed. One family has seen horrendous effects on their children. They are a non-TV family. The only thing that's allowed on TV is ESPN.
Sports.
You might guess which child that one is. The other one, the kids have switches. They don't have iPads. They just have switches. And so they're allowed a half hour a day. And if they talk back, switch in the bedroom. So it's non-negotiable. The last one, the children have diabetes. And they have to have phones, but there's no social media. There's no Google. There's no internet. There's just this connection with their CGM, their monitors for insulin, and that's it. What about your kids? Is it so convenient when you're shopping? Just give them the phone. At a restaurant? Just give them the phone. I want to visit. Years ago, we went to lunch with some friends, and they didn't give their kids a phone. She pulled out these little boxes. I'm like, what's in that box? And there were dice and clay and little things to color, and they only got their boxes when they went to a restaurant. Well, guess who wanted to go to restaurants? The boys did. Be creative. Be creative in helping them, because we're not helping our children, especially anyone under 14, have a phone. Even Steve Jobs, even Bill Gates, they were asked, when are your kids going to have phones? And both of them, do you know the age they said? Not till they're in high school or out of high school. Don't be fooled that your kid needs a phone because they go to school. When I was teaching, all these little second graders would have phones. I don't want that in my classroom. Get it out of here. Well, my mom's going to call. Oh, no, she's not. She can call the office. We have an amazing system. If a child wants to get a hold of a parent, or a parent wants to get a hold of the child, it goes through the school. You cannot be calling during math. The number one culprit of that, guess who it is? Mom.
Lawnmower.
The lawnmower mom. Helicopter moms kind of went away. They were the ones that hovered. Do you know, raise your hand if you know what a lawnmower mom is. Oh, she's the mom that never allows her children to be hurt by anyone. Oh, My sister's rude to my kids, so no. Mm-mm. You don't talk to your aunt anymore. Oh, that coach, we're getting you off that team. He yelled at you. Oh, I got principal. Principal Veach, that teacher failed my son in math, so we're going to have to do a little switcheroo. And so this parent is now telling authority experts what to do because their baby is not successful and someone yelled at them.
And mow everything down.
It is really sad what's going on. It's really, really sad. And there's got to be hope and there's got to be a way that we change and switch this. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment, but for right now, turn to a neighbor. And I want you to say what you were just kind of convicted about.
How many of you use Alpha in your church? What is the gold of Alpha, other than Nikki Gumbel, who I listen to every morning in his devotion? What's the gold? Out loud, somebody. Listening. Okay, what else? Questions. Space for questions. What else? Leading people to Jesus is good. Critical questions are huge, isn't it? I'm looking for one more thing. Guess what it is?
Food.
Food. Who here is an AJ Swoboda fan? I love AJ. And just recently looking at his material, one of the things that I thought about a lot was that in deconstruction, the main culprit, and deconstruction, is deconstruction a bad thing? No. It's not a bad thing. We deconstructed Amy. 100 years. Don't say it so loud. We're not doing that. Do you have the big robe? I have a district supervisor hat from the 40s and 50s. I don't wear it. It's like a funny piece. I do have a shot glass, but Angela's Temple shot glass. Somebody thought they were ordering communion glasses and they ordered shot glasses. And I have one. It's never had alcohol in it, ever. But I do have it. Deconstruction is not a bad thing. It's what you're deconstructing. We're not doing things the same. Your parents didn't do ministry the way you did. Mine didn't do ministry. So your kids are going to do it differently than you do it. That's good. The problem with deconstruction, according to AJ, is what they do, where do they deconstruct? What Stella was just yelling about right here on the internet, right? Where should they deconstruct? Around the dinner table. The problem is most of you don't have dinner. Or if you do, you don't have it around a table. It's too busy. I get it. We had very busy kids, but still a couple days a week, we sat around the table. Is the food the magic? What is? The conversation after dinner. Does it happen every night? No. But every now and then, you're going to see the heart. And she started out. On this one, you started about the heart of the kid? She's doing. You're going to do the heart of the child. Because let me tell you, you don't need obedience. You need that kid's heart. And when they deconstruct, who do you want them deconstructing with? Some knucklehead on the internet? That's what they're doing right now. Because you don't want to sit around the table. You're too busy. You want to go do DoorDash. I don't know what it is we do, but it's just silly. Have a meal with your kids. My kids hate restaurants. Did you know that? I didn't know it till they were older. We take them to restaurants and they go oh my God, I got to do that again? They wanted to be at home around a table. Deconstruction is not bad. People, get the right people around them. One of the things that we made conscious efforts with was to get the right people around our children. We hired great youth pastors. You know why? Because I knew my kids wouldn't always listen to me. A lot of those youth pastors are out there today. They're pastoring today. You know why? Because I wanted them for selfish reasons. I wanted them invested in my kids. Some of it worked, some of it didn't. But there were great people in their lives. I would drag people around my dinner table that were some of the greatest people, the greatest leaders of our churches. It wasn't a burden for them to grow up as a pastor's kid. It was a blessing. They loved it because they got to hang out with the world's best leaders. How is that hard? It's not hard. Every one of them has a different story about somebody else investing in them. Chad got saved with the Baptist church down the street at Promise Keepers. I preach every freaking Sunday to him.
Oh, those Baptists.
That's not right. Kyle will tell you about Keith Galloway, a college football player from the Naval Academy that flew jets around our community, that was his small group leader, that was like a stud of a human being, that loved Jesus, that poured into him, that caused his heart to fall in love with Jesus. Like, let me just tell you, deconstruction's not bad. Get it in the right places and make room for them to have conversations.
Oh, he's on fire now.
Oh, we're going to preach. I feel a preach coming.
Get the preacher out. Get the preacher out in him. It is the heart of the matter. Jennifer Hudson sings an old song. It's just the heart of the matter. I love that song. And you can sing it. You can sing it for your friend, for your kids. It is the heart of the matter. Because the heart of the matter, what it builds is trust. Do your kids trust you? Like if they make a mess, are they going to get yelled at? Are they going to get their head flicked, their ear lobe yanked, their arm pinched? Are they going to get screamed at? What if they make a mess? What if you've just vacuumed and they come in and they spill soil from outside? Or they forget to take, I forgot to take my shoes off. How do you forget? We don't wear shoes in the house. Are you going to scream bloody murder? Are you going to put him down? You always, you're so dumb, blah, blah, blah. Make it a point to not call your children names. If you put anything in your mission statement, we will not call each other names. You don't call them dumb. You certainly don't curse at them. You don't tell them they're stupid. You don't tell them they're just silly thinking. If they're really intelligent, you never tell them they're smart. You tell them, I like your strong brain. If they're a little bit slower, you don't say, well, he's kind of slow. He's going to just say, it's going to take you a little bit longer. Be careful with your words.
Yeah.
Because you're talking to their heart.
Yeah.
And you want them to trust you. You want them to trust you because you're trusting Jesus and they're watching you trust Jesus. But if you're being cruel or unfair and you don't have their heart captured, they're going to listen to you. And people say, how did you raise these kids that love Jesus? Well, we did teach them to make good choices, but we trusted them. Did you hear what we said in the mission statement? They would be able to speak their mind with clarity. We taught them to have good conversation. What do you want to talk about? What do you want to discuss? What's on your mind? What's on your heart? Tell us what you're thinking. When was the last time you told your 10-year-old, tell me what you're thinking? Your 5-year-old, tell me with your words. Show me in a picture. I want to hear you, or I want to listen to you. Those are very important. That's when you're going to have the roots of the matter so they have wings to fly when they're older. So the heart of the matter, I want to share with you something I stole from our daughter. Our daughter also goes around and speaks about parenting. She's an amazing parent. She's studied it a lot. Mm-hmm. And here are three things that she does, and write them down if you would like to steal these as I have stolen them. There are three ways to obey in our home. This is part of their mission statement. You obey the right way, all the way, and with a happy heart. Those are three values that she and Mark have adopted. The right way, all the way and with a happy heart. The right way is not, this is not the right way. All right. Right away. Wait, I'm not done. No. And with a happy heart. Stomping. So they've curbed all that. And how, you're saying, well, yeah, but you don't know. We deal with that every day. I'm going to give you a couple ideas. If you don't have a consequence, no one will learn the behavior. You get it from dog trainers. I watched a dog training thing the other day. I don't even own a dog. But I believe in the theories of Pavlov's dogs, and I believe in that they have something going. So this lady was trying to get her dog to quit jumping. So she had treats in her hand, and the dog came in, and he's jumping, and she did this. About 3 or 4 jumps later, guess what the dog did? He sat down and waited for those treats. It doesn't take them very long, and it doesn't take children very long. You want to stomp away? You're doing dishes tonight. You want to keep going? That's dishes for 2 nights. Let's make that 3 nights. You want to roll your eyes? That's 4 nights. You're not putting them down like, oh, you must really like to do the dishes. Nope, you're not saying anything. Can you have another chance. Would you like to do that right? Would you like to do it without rolling your eyes? Without stomping your feet? Thank you, because now I trust you. Did you hear that conversation? You've given them a warning, and you end it with, I trust you. We were at Kyle's house the other day, and the kids were doing something. I don't know what they were doing. They were. I know it was close to bedtime. And I turned to Boston. He's Kyle's oldest. And I said, Boston, I need the kids to go upstairs and get their pajamas on. And I know they might need a little bit of guidance to make sure their clothes are put away. But I trust you. And he looked at me like, you trust me? I see, I trust you. I trust you're going to be helpful. Not bossy, because there's a difference between helpful and bossy, but I trust you. Because I know your mom is really busy and we can't afford to have all the clothes all over the place. He goes, oh, no, no. And he came downstairs. I said, do you have a report? He goes, like what kind of report? Like a paper report? I said, no. Like, is all the clothes off the floor and everybody has pajamas on? He said, yeah, that's a good report. So what happened? I took a child that had never had that happen. He's never been in charge of brother and sister putting on pajamas. I didn't want to go upstairs and deal with all that because I was doing dishes. So what happened? I trust him. When was the last time you said, I trust you? It is magical what happens to a child. It's like taking that worst, horrible child in your classroom, which I have had plenty, and you give them a note and says, I need this to go to the office. Will you please be the one? And that kid's always like me, and the whole class is going, him? Are you sure? Yes, because I trust you. Turn to your neighbor and say you trust them. It's powerful. When was the last time you told your spouse, I trust you? Dwell on that one a minute. Because it doesn't always come easy for a lot of people. Those 3 points were right away, all the way, and with the happy heart. The heart of the matter. We need to teach kids that we love them. Kids don't always believe that their parents love them. Do you know one of the number one things a psychologist will tell you is that your children never get tired of pleasing parents, being loved by parents, being acknowledged by parents, and having their parents be proud of them. They never lose that. They never lose that, whether they're famous or not. They never, ever lose that. Kids want to be loved by their parents and acknowledged. And I hope you're saying, I love you every single day, because that goes with the heart of the matter in trusting them. Children need to be told that they're not the reason you're being, how am I saying this, that they don't drive you crazy. I run into moms and like, oh, these kids are wild kids. This is the wild child right here. And that one's crazy. He's just cray-cray. We just call him cray-cray. We forgot his name. He's just cray-cray. And what are those kids hearing? That's horrible. It's horrible. And then the mom's like, well, I can't do anything with them anymore. I can't do anything. So I'm just going to send them to bed. I don't even care if they brush their teeth. I don't care. I'm just going to bed. I'm just going to have my glass of wine because I can't wait to get to the end of the day to have my glass of wine because these kids are driving me crazy. Ladies, it's not that glass of wine that's going to help you. And thank you, Pastor Joe, for bringing that up, because that is my mantra. We are not going to be doing that. It's just, I don't care that you have a shot glass. We're not, it's empty.
Never had anything in it. It's always been dry.
Oh, it's just like, wow. You don't need a glass of wine at the end of the day just to calm down. What needs to happen, I think, is the heart of the matter. The truth spoken, love spoken. You say, well, my kids cry. Well, guess what? Kids cry. Babies cry. One-year-olds cry. Everybody cries. And you're like, I can't handle it anymore. And I think a lot of us just don't understand how much crying goes on when you have kids. And the disappointment, the, you know, that. And I would have these kids in my classroom come in, and I'd say, oh, yeah, let's try that math paper one more time. I see a couple errors here. And they go, taught you that? Was that like on a cartoon or something? I'm like, this is not happening in my classroom. You can react like, oh, okay, but not, So what's happening here is that we have these kids and they're scared to be honest and they're scared to give and they're scared and they don't understand where we want better behavior from the crying. If you have a one-year-old and it's crying, it's either hungry, it wants its bottle, it wants to be comforted, or guess what? It's tired.
Needs to be changed.
If you have a two-year-old, it is throwing a tantrum. And two-year-olds throw tantrums. How many of you have a two-year-old? Anybody with two? They just throw tantrums. This is what you do. You walk away. Now, if they're four and throwing a tantrum, you don't walk away. You take their little hands, and you maybe have to pick them up. You take them to the bed, and you say, you can be in your room, and you can throw a tantrum here, because we don't want to hear your tantrum. And you go ahead and cry. And I agree, you're sad. You're whatever. You cry. Go away.
You can come back out when you stop.
What's that one?
You can come back out when you stop.
Yes, you can come back out of the bedroom when you stop crying. When you're done being sad, come on back. An 8-year-old that is throwing a tantrum. That's what we're running into, inappropriate behavior. And if you don't know the age group, what's appropriate, can I encourage you to go on Pinterest? I like Pinterest better than Google. And there's wonderful authors there that have promoted their stuff. And there's wonderful places that you can read. What can I expect from a 2-year-old? What can I expect from a 4-year-old? What do I expect from an 8-year-old? What can I expect? Get ahead of the game and what's appropriate for the consequences that are going to happen that are in front of you. The child that is stomping, the child that is smacking their teeth at you, the child that's rolling their eyes, you don't want that behavior, but it happens. What are you going to do about it? We would take away sleep time. We would say, okay, your bedtime is 7:30, and you rolled your eyes. You're going to bed at 7:15. What? Oh, do you want to make it 7 o'clock? Because you don't talk back to me. And keep that standard going. That's part of your mission statement. That's part of knowing what you're on the same page with your spouse on. That if they talk back, this is a consequence. It's not about not getting the cookie. It's not about taking away dessert. It's not about not playing in their baseball game. It's not about not going to youth group. Who does that? You know, it's about their behavior at home, and the punishment fits the crime. Yeah. Kids don't want to go to bed early. That's like the worst thing in the world. So put it on them. You won't roll your eyes at me, you go right ahead, but you're going to bed 15 minutes early. But mom, oh, no. We don't but mom at all. You don't but mom me. And you don't tell me no. I was shocked the other night. We were eating with some friends. And a three-year-old turns and says no to dad. Are you allowing your child to tell you no? Because if they're telling you no, they're going to tell God no. And here's the correlation. They're watching you love Jesus. And you're saying, yes, Jesus. And we sing, yes, God, yes, God, yes, God, yes, God. Have you told God no lately? Let me say that again. If you're teaching your children it's okay to tell you no, they're going to be pretty happy to tell God no. I think it is right there. Yes, ma'am. My children never called me ma'am. They called me mom. But I'd say, you're going to be doing this. And they'd say, yes, ma'am. You're doing this chore today. Yes, ma'am. Yes, dad. You don't have to say ma'am. You can say, yes, mom. Thank you, mom. You're welcome, mom. All those things that go, what words are coming out of your child that is not appropriate for today? Because remember, going back to the very beginning of this, I said, those that are, I don't want to read that quote. Any person without significant understanding of authority, because if they're going to tell you no, they're going to tell their coach no, they're going to tell their teacher no, they're going to tell anyone that's trying to tell them anything no. It has to start at home. Discipline, disappointments, relationships, and achievement has not developed and is not ready for adulthood. Are you preparing them for adulthood? That is the question at hand today. Are you preparing them? Because they're not going to always be with you. Are they going to be able to be successful adults that they've chosen the road to live by, to live on, to live with? Dave's got it.
We have 11 minutes.
Oh, wow. This time together is actually 15 minutes shorter than our first session, and we don't know why. The powers that be just made it that way. Sorry.
How many of you enjoyed Joe's message last night?
Oh, so good, Joe.
Joe for a lot of decades. And what Joe did on the stage last night is what he did when I golfed with him very poorly for 3 days. It's what he did when I hung out with him 10 years ago. It's what he would be, I assume, Lena, at home. What you saw of Joe was just Joe, which is, I think, a magical thing, because some of us pull into church and go, hey, after we've been yelling at our kids all the way to church. We just solved that by, after one time I had to get down off the pulpit and go apologize for before I could take communion on a Sunday morning, and we just first started, I had to do that. So I just started driving separately from her so I don't have to... We did. It worked. I didn't have to apologize anymore before I could take communion. Authenticity. Your kids sniff it out. Are you real? Is it who you are in the pulpit, or are you just like putting on a show? Because they don't care about a show. They want to know, is this God stuff real? Do not exasperate your kids. How do you get them to make good choices? Don't exasperate them. Don't be a pain in the, you know. We got put down for the last couple years about not trusting science. Listen, for every action, there is an equal reaction. That's parenting. If your reaction is not equal, that's not good. If they do X, they should get something that's equal. If they do Y, they should get something that's equal. Every reaction. In our culture, if someone commits a crime, are they getting an equal reaction? Who believes in science? You want to do more or you want to do questions?
One more thing. I just have one more thing to add. And then we'll do questions. Get your questions ready.
There we go. And back to the mom that's crazy and the dad that's just like doesn't know what to do. She's got the kids. Dads, get more involved if you're not. It's not fair. It's not right. Your parents, your kids need you. You are parents. If you need to step it up, Dad, I just want to encourage you to step it up. Recently, I was in a home, four kids. The ages of the kids were between 5 and 17. Here's what I heard. I'm hungry. Not, oh, can I have something to eat? Da, 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 da. What?
We're not going to get invited anywhere.
I know, we're not going to be invited. I'm tattling. Another one said, did you wash my stuff? I have to go to work soon. Another one said, Mom, my car needs gas. This is a 16-year-old. The 11-year-old said, where did you put my swimsuit? There aren't any clean towels. Do you know there aren't any clean towels, Mom? Get me some water, Mom. My friend is here. He needs water, too. I thought it was so sad. Yes, this is a pastor's wife. Yes, this was in the middle of the day. The saddest thing for me watching her was she had no idea. She had no idea. Because I think that if a child is hungry, he should learn to feed himself. He can make a sandwich. If a child can go to work, be responsible, and drive himself to work, he can learn to wash his own uniform. If a child can dress himself, then he can learn to rinse and hang his own swimsuit. If a child is thirsty, he can get himself a drink, but more importantly, get his friend a drink first. You know, I can't stress enough how important chores are. I was actually accused that I chored my kids to death. I kind of take it as kind of exciting. I'm like, I'm such a little rebel. Kids would come home, and mind you, I was teaching, so they would come home to a note card, and it would be either a 3-chore day, a 2-chore day, a 1-chore day, or a no-chore day. And the kids got used to coming home and say, how many chores today, Mom? And I'd say, it's a 2-chore. Yes, we got this. And they would have it, I had it written out, and you might have picked the one that was dust the piano and the living room, or it might have been vacuum the bedrooms, or it might be fold the towels, or just a whole list. I was very organized in this. And when it was a no-chore day, yes, you're the best mom. We can go play outside. It was awesome. I love those days. I love the smiles on their faces. But here's what choring did for our kids and what it did for our family. It made people responsible. And it took a lot of pressure off of me. And did they do it perfect? No. But I was able to teach. Very teachable moments. You see the toilet, and I asked you to clean it. Well, that includes that ring down there. I'm not going to clean that. I said, well, either you clean it, your sister clean it, dad cleans it, brother cleans it, or I clean it. But we're coming back to you. It's going to come back full circle. So let's just do it right the first time here, and then we can teach the others. Because when you have boys, you have pee rings down there, right? And it's disgusting. And I think all boys should clean toilets because you are disgusting. By 10, they should be doing their own laundry. By 10, let me say that again. By 10, who has a 10-year-old? They should be doing their own laundry. Mom, stop doing your kids' laundry.
5 minutes.
Stop doing the dishes every night. The kids should be, by 5, they can unload the dishwasher. Well, they're going to break a plate. Well, they might break a plate. It's a plate. You're teaching responsibility. You're teaching that a household runs because everyone contributes. It's not all on mom. You don't have to be up at 6 a.m. making breakfast for the entire family. You're not making lunches if they're already in grade school. Everybody can make, I mean, you can buy Lunchables if you need to, or buy, what are those? I love those peanut butter things that are already made. What are they called? Uncrustables. My favorite. Bad nutrition, but very easy to make a lunch. Why are moms so doing this? This is going back to that lawnmower mom that's going to pave everything perfect for the child so they never have to be sad. They never have to be anxious. They never have to come against anything that will interrupt their happiness. It is not your job to make your child happy. It is your job to train them. And chores help. Teach them about money. You're not broke because the church doesn't pay you enough. You're broke because you mishandle your money. You live outside your means if you're broke. Teach your kids about money. Do you know second grade we learn about money? We play treasure chest in second grade, and we have all this fake money, and we're like, we're rich. And I would let them throw the coins, and yeah, I was that teacher. And you know, money is so important. Teach them the value of a dollar and how it relates to work. Question and answers?
Well, here's the deal.
Here's the deal.
I've never had this happen when any organization that I've been a part of. So somebody else so totally made mistakes here. It says in your printed material, it's 12:15. It says in your app, it's 12:15. It said in the previous stuff, it was 12:30. So how about this? We'll stay and answer questions. If you want to go to lunch, I get it. No guilt, no shame.
We're hungry too.
So
if you want to take us out to lunch,
we'll answer.
Joe,
we'll
Lena.
Answer a few questions, and if you've had enough, I get it. Who's got a question?
Oh. Nathan.
Mr. Llewellyn.
Mr. Llewellyn. Oh, that's a great question. We stayed home a few years.
Yeah, we didn't do it when she...
Yeah, we didn't do it.
She went back to school when Kyle went to kindergarten.
No, when he was 3. But I did, I did teach preschool, and I taught part-time when I was... when the kids were little.
It's an interesting and a difficult dilemma for working two parents working, but I think that it's all depends on your kids and your family and your makeup. For us, it worked well because she didn't like being the pastor's wife only. She loved being a pastor's wife, and she was very supportive, but she really has a lot of, you might notice, a little bit of drive, and she kind of likes to do what she likes to do. And so for her to have her own identity was really important to her. So I think everybody's got to be obedient to what God's calling them to do. Somebody else.
That's a really good question. I just finished a book. My brother's something. I'll think about it in a second. I'll remember it in a minute. It is, that's a tough one because it happens. You know, it's in the Bible, right? Cain, Abel, I mean, let's hope it doesn't get that bad. Okay. Our kids did really well when I stayed out of it. When Dave stayed out of it. It's like walking away from the 2-year-old that's throwing a tantrum. You guys need to work this out. You're brothers. You love each other. You're great. You're whatever. And can you explain to one another what's upsetting you? If they can voice it, if they can draw it, if they can If they're frustrated, walk away, but find a toy that they can do together. Maybe it's a puzzle. I don't know how old your kids are, but if there's something they can learn to do together, it really helps for them to do something together and see it created together. I always go back to puzzles. I think there's so much value for children to have puzzles in their lives. So I think it builds something amazing. So
here's how well we did with that. When there's a picture of Chad leaving for college, and Kyle looked at it once and goes, that was the happiest day of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. They loved each other, but there's almost 5 years between them. So that had a lot to do with it. Question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how you guys navigated extracurricular activities. It feels like a lot of our kids' friends, but goals and all parents drive everywhere all the time. Just trying to navigate the balance of
that. We did that, but back in our day, when we dropped them off at baseball or cheer or whatever, we dropped them off and walked away and went grocery shopping. And now you guys all stick around for that stuff. I do not know why that changed. And maybe it's a helicopter and a lawnmower mom, but I loved my kids being involved because it gave me 2 hours away from them. So, and remember, I was teaching, so it was nice to be able to drop them off and then go pick them up and work it out carpool with somebody. So I think there are really creative ways, and that is to find a friend on the team and be, you know, it's their week on, your week off, or you pick up, you drop off, however it works. I think there's really creative ways. We went full bore. All our kids did select sports.
So it's a completely different world today, though.
It really is.
Your guys' sports level is night and day from what we experienced.
Yeah, you guys go to all the practices.
Like, you guys fly across the country to go to games. We went like across town.
Yeah.
So you have to make some harder choices than we did, without a doubt.
Question. Oh, no. You say, we don't hurt things. We don't hurt ourselves. Oh, absolutely. That's a no. Because you have the right to say no. They don't have the right to tell you no. And you say, we don't break things. We take care of things. This is a provision. This is something we bought. This is valuable. You can be mad. You go ahead and be angry. But you don't hurt things, and you don't hurt yourself.
I think teaching value of items today is, we really live in a throwaway society, and it's disheartening as grandparents to take toys to kids and go like, yeah, that'll be gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think teaching them the value is really, really vital.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
But breaking things in the house, all that stuff. Hobby, even if you say no, we don't do that in our home. You know.
You have to find what's valuable to that person, and make the consequence. Absolutely.
Yeah. We did all that. Okay. So.
Yeah.
Now there's hope, right? Because if you don't do what is right, because we're not gonna kick him out. We're gonna love him. But we tell him we love him. But there's such a difference from when they're little, and we never have to. It's weird because he never had to go in time out. He was always a good child. Like the way we're
Yeah, but here's the deal. There's still hope.
There is
There's
lots
still
of hope.
There he's 18, hope. And he's a knucklehead. Anybody here a knucklehead at 18? Like, I got saved at 18. Like, you, when I got saved, it was like, Lord God, I don't even know how this is going to work. And so I would not lose hope. I would continue to be loving and kind without being an enabler. And yet, you don't want to kick them out. And yet, at some point, they have to be responsible. So you're trying to raise an adult, and now they are adults as in age. And so you have to choose at certain points to make hard choices. But just keep loving them. And I believe God is going to turn things around for you.
I think encouraging him that you trust him and that he's had a few bad moments and he needs to just continue to know that he's loved and accepted and he's forgiven. We can't hold that over his head. There's a better future for him, as Dave said. Yeah, absolutely.
Right there. Yeah.
To read their Bibles and choose to spend time with the Lord. You know, they choose those things. But did you ever have things that you felt like, you know, there's also habits and disciplines. How did you navigate that with your kids as far as helping train them in those of their life without it becoming, regimented?
It never was regimented. Our son, when he did the Promise Keepers moment and the Holy Spirit touched his life, he began to... We got mad at him. His bedroom was above ours. And we could hear the... What is going on? Just you have the TV on. And good dad goes stomping up there in his tidy whities. And he opens the door. And there he is praying on his knees.
Never mind. I'm good.
Okay. Tidy whitey moment. Okay. Good night, son. He comes downstairs. He goes... He's on his knees praying. He was 16.
Everybody has a different journey, right?
The daughter, we went on a missions trip. And part of being on this missions trip was being in the Word and journaling. We were required to journal. I went on the trip. I was one of the, because it was in Mexico, so I went. And my Bible. And she, I have a picture of her. She's 14. She's journaling, first time she'd ever journaled. She's never given up. She's never walked away from that habit.
Yeah. I was just talking to Greg Johnson. When Chad was 12, Greg had dinner at our house. One of the great opportunities of a pastor's kid. Chad looked at across the table and saw those parachute pants, Lord God, and said, I want to be him. I'm like, all right, I'll keep my Levi's, but you go ahead. And that was part of it. So, you know, everybody's got their own journey. The Bedroom Bible College was my answer to your question that Greg Johnson put together when he was just a kid.
Yeah.
So we'll do one more. And I'll just want you to know that she is really good on social media and returning emails. And this is what her passion is, if you couldn't tell. And so if you have more questions, she will meet you here or in the cyber world.
Stella? Question.
How did you help your children when they're transitioning to their adult bodies? Like, have a lot of emotions that we're trying to process through as she's getting ready to hit puberty. How did you walk your kids through that very emotional time?
We were very honest with our children. We talked a lot about sex. We talked a lot about our bodies, our body parts, what they did. We never called it a hoo-hoo or a pee-pee. We used real words. We just were very honest with them. We talked about it like it was very natural.
We didn't have the sex talk. We talked about it all the time.
Yeah. We never had a sex talk with our children because we always engaged in talking about... We tried to normalize everything. I would say that's more of a chemical thing, and I would really be careful foods that she's eating. I think sometimes our children misbehave not because they're being mean or bad or hate you. because a lot of parents are offended, like, my child hates me, and that's why they cry all the time. It could just be the foods they're eating. She might be really, really sensitive to some of the chemicals in the home. I'm kind of big on this right now, like avoid candles, avoid, you know, these kids, these parents that spray their kids with that sunscreen. Do you know how many chemicals are in that? This is terrible, you guys. Throw it away. But what is she eating?
Not all terrible either. Everybody's got emotions.
Everybody has emotions, but if she's like crashing, she might need more protein. I'm just saying. I would give her a chunk of cheese.
Send them up.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. We are here to answer any questions for you. We love you guys. Thank you. We're honored.